Kia ora, welcome to Asian in Aotearoa, a podcast of uncensored conversations with Asian creatives. I'm Jenna, and in this first episode of 2023, I catch up with Maggie Shuai. Maggie's a Chinese New Zealander, a multimedia journalist at Renews, a documentary maker, and an aspiring lady of leisure. Here, we talk about the new series that Maggie directed called Dating While Asian, and I also ask her about her own dating experiences. Kia ora, Maggie.
Kia ora.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Okay, first, yes. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, sure. Kia ora koutou. My name is Maggie Shuai. I'm a multimedia journalist at Renews. I'm from China, from the province of Henan, and came to New Zealand when I was 5 months old with my family. And I've been in Tamaki Makaurau ever since then.
How old are you?
Now I'm 27.
Sun, moon, rising?
Okay, so my star sign is Taurus. I did actually look this up before I came.
Did you?
I knew you'd want to ask me. And I was like, I gotta have this top of mind. But now I've forgotten. I think rising is either Capricorn or Gemini.
Uh-huh.
And my moon is the other one. So Gemini and Capricorn. Moon rising.
Oh, we're the same. Maybe.
Maybe?
Maybe, because I'm Gemini rising, Capricorn moon.
Oh,
so we're all
okay.
Either the same or the opposite.
Oh, I think that, wait, no, I think, yeah, Gemini rising.
Really?
Yeah, Gemini rising, yeah. I remember now, yeah. And Capricorn moon, yeah.
Really?
Which, Gemini rising, I never understood. Like, that doesn't feel quite like me. But Capricorn moon, I can
understand. Like bubbly, warm. And so, okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the Capricorn moon.
I think I'm quite neurotic and, you know, just... Mm-hmm. Focused on details and wanting things to be just right and
relatable.
Security, stability, reliability.
Yeah.
Yeah. You feel that?
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay, cool. So congrats, because today, I don't know when this will come out, but when we're recording, today, Dating While Asian has been released.
Yes.
And I've watched it, loved it.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Really loved it. It was so sweet. I loved the people that you've worked with. It was Nomuna. Is that how you say her name?
Nomuna, yes.
Nomuna. Yeah. So, God, when she was talking about that guy getting in his bed fully clothed.
Yeah. That's a big no. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. What I love about that moment is like people watch it and they think, oh my God, like what kind of horrible thing has this man done? Like what kind of gross, like, you know, hard thing. And it's, getting into bed fully clothed.
Yeah, with outside clothes?
Yes, like outside daytime clothes. Yeah. Not even his chill clothes.
That is deranged. I loved it. I was thinking, you know, and she was with her Satisfyer Pro and telling that story about how she got, like, her first sex toy was a giant, huge purple thing. I'm like, that is, we are the same. So I loved it. Okay, do I have a question here? Yes. The question is, how did the idea for the show come up?
Dating is just such a huge part of like your life and what occupies your brain, especially in your 20s, I think. So there's just like so much to excavate there. And then when you combine it with, you know, your culture, there's so many like nuanced ways your culture, your identity can filter into your romantic life. So I just thought, there's so many like, I don't know, cool themes and stories that we can delve into here. Yeah, it's always something I'd like been curious about and like wanted to do some kind of content around, but didn't know how to make it happen because like it's such an intimate topic. You know, you can't just like film people at their first date. You can't, you know, it's not a really easy topic to delve into through documentary, maybe through scripted stuff, but through documentary and journalism, which is where I work, like it's, you know, how do you really delve into the space? But when the Inside On Air funding round came for targeted audiences, you know, you're kind of always like thinking of like, oh, what could I potentially pitch for this? I thought animation could be a cool way to get into those spaces, which is what we've done with Dating While Asian. Is it's partly told through animation, so you know we can't be there for Nomura's hookup with this horrible boy that got into bed in his outside clothes, but you can show it through animation, in a kind of abstract way.
And I guess
the idea just developed from there. Yeah,
I thought it was really well done.
Oh, thank you.
What was the response like when you put the call out?
It was beautiful, honestly. Like, I was quite moved by all the responses. So what we did was we put out a social media call out for people to apply if they were interested in being part of the series. We said, you know, anybody, any kind of Asian, any kind of, you know, orientation, relationship status, whatever. And there were a bunch of questions that they had to fill out in their Google form. Things like, you know, like, what are you dreaming about? Who's your crush? What are some dramas in your love life? What's the most impactful thing that's happened in your romantic life? And like, why do you want to be a part of the series? And like, the responses were so thoughtful. Like, people wrote paragraphs about themselves. And like, I'm so heartbroken we couldn't have featured everybody. Mm. Yeah, because like, yeah, there were some really earnest responses. But the response to the question, like, why do you want to be a part of the series, was really cool, because that was where it kind of reassured me, oh, people do like support the kaupapa of this series, because a lot of people were talking about how like cool it is to have this platform or to be able to like show different facets of themselves. And Grace wrote something really nice in her response.
It's Grace Coe.
Grace Coe, she's so good with her words. But I remember our first like kickoff meeting with the production team. I read out like a bunch of responses mm-hmm. that people had sent in, and it was quite like a nice way to set the tone for the series. And Grace's response was one of the ones I read out. Hopefully she's all good with me reading this. I'm sure she would be. We can check with her afterwards. So in response to the question, why are you interested in being part of the series? She wrote, whenever I read or watch an experience that I resonate with, it gives me a massive sense of community that I don't find anywhere else in my life, especially if it has to do with my Asian heritage. It lightens my experience and allows me to find humour in the shared collective. It gives me the warm fuzzies and gives me the this is what life is all about vibes. I want to share my experience to not only experience them again as an adult or just as someone a day older, but to make someone else feel seen and validated in their experiences and feelings. And then she wrote, whenever I read or watch an experience that I do not resonate with, it opens a fresh perspective that is interesting and important for me to understand, as it helps me make sense of the world around me. I hope this series reaches people that do not identify as Pan-Asian, because I think our experiences will help them discover themselves and their world, as well as the part they play in our lives.
Mm. Shout out to Grace.
Shout out to Grace.
Who is episode one.
Oh, wow, really?
Oh, no, wait. On the screen, she was the first episode.
I thought I was thinking about...
Oh, the podcast.
The podcast,
oh,
yeah,
I'm talking about your project. Yeah. No.
She is episode one, yes. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it'd be really cool to start with an episode that is, like, very Asian, very Chinese and Taiwanese, like, very situated in its, like, cultural connection, because there are also aspects of the series that aren't necessarily tied to the Asianness aspect, and there are just stories from Pan-Asian New Zealanders sharing their dating stories, and it might not be wrapped up in things to do with culture or
makes
trauma
sense.
Or any of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were there any specific stories that came up that resonated with you?
I mean, there were so many moments like that. Like, literally everybody had something that made me go like, oh, shit. Like, we can swear on this thing.
Yeah.
That made me go like, oh, shit. Like, I've never thought about it in that way before. Eleanor and Victor's episodes really struck me. Eleanor's story is around her learning that she's a lesbian, basically. Going through, like, her whole high school life thinking, oh, I really want a boyfriend. I want to be able to have this person show off on Instagram, to take to school balls, to just feel like, you know, this cute Asian girl with her tall white boyfriend kind of vibes, you know? And she wanted to fulfill that ideal. And I'd never heard someone just explicitly say it like that before or, like, admit it, maybe. Like, now at this stage in her life, she realises, actually, I am not attracted to men. I haven't been in the past. But all of these, like, this desire for validation prevented her from seeing that truth about
that's
herself.
Socially constructed.
Yeah, yeah. And then I learned about the concept of compulsory heterosexuality for the first time from Eleanor, which is this notion that queer women, lesbian women feel compelled to be heterosexual just through how society makes them feel like they really want men's affection, men's validation in order to succeed and move up in the world. And that's how you see that you can gain respect or be valued, and how that can, yeah, seep into what you think your own sexuality is, which is wild.
What excites you the most about this project?
I think what excites me about it is how intimate it feels, and how, like, I hope it really, you know, like Grace says, makes people feel seen and feel like, oh, these feelings I've had deep inside that maybe haven't really acknowledged are felt by pretty much everybody. Yeah, which is like a cool feeling to have. I think that's maybe partly how I felt when I talked to Eleanor and Victor and, you know, everyone else in the series, was like, oh yeah, we're all, you know, a little bit lonely, a little bit insecure, yearning for love.
Yeah. I loved it because it was sort of like, even though I'm like 10, 15 years older than the people who are on the show, these are conversations that I might have now with my really close friends.
Mm.
But when I was in my 20s, there was nothing.
Mm.
So it was really cool to see. And so you sent me your Tinder bio.
I did. Oh my gosh.
Are you dating at the moment? Is this a no-go zone?
No, that's fine. Okay. No, this is fine. Full context, I sent Jenna my Tinder bio because you asked me to introduce myself.
Yeah.
And so you asked me to introduce myself at the beginning of this podcast, and it's always very telling because I never know how to introduce myself beyond work. I'm always like, oh, I'm a multimedia journalist at Re.
Mm.
And I'm like, what else? I don't know.
Well, you directed this thing.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. But like, I never know what else to say. And when I was replying to email, I was like, oh, what else do I tell Jenna? Oh, you know, it's fitting. Maybe I should just give her my Tinder bio.
Yeah. And so I thought, well, let's talk about your dating since you've made a show called Date True. Violation.
Yes. Yeah. Am I dating at the moment? Not really.
So you're not on the apps?
Like, on and off. Because I think when I'm on the apps, like, I go on for like a couple of days.
Yes.
And, you know,
just to see. And you're like, yeah, poking your head out.
Poke my head out. And Chanel says this. I don't know if they say it in their episode, but they've definitely said it many times in person to me, is like they'd go on Grindr to like make their presence known, which I think on Grindr is like a bit different in terms of how the app is structured. Mm. That makes a little bit more sense. But yeah, on Tinder as well, you know, or like Bumble or wherever, like I go on for like a few days and like, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm here. And then I kind of dip out.
So not active at the moment?
At the moment, it's not active. Yeah. Mm. I think, I activated Tinder for like a little bit at the start of the year when I came back from my travels and, yeah, talk to a few people. Because what you do is also you harvest, you know, your matches for like...
Harvest?
So you're active for a few days and then, you know, you harvest a bunch of matches and then, you know, then you have like some people to talk to.
Yeah.
And you don't have the time and space to then also be swiping and matching with more people, right? Because then it just, you know, piles on and then you have that situation where it's like, you know, too many people and you just feel fatigued and don't talk to anybody. So, you know, you got to keep it like a bit contained and talk to like a few people.
How many people do you match with?
I can have at any one time where I'm like swiping for a few days. Maybe match with like, it's a good question, maybe like 10 or 20.
Uh-huh.
And then talk to like a fraction of those, like maybe like 5 people out of those. Yeah, because like they might...
What are they? I'm like,
nah,
because I'm
great.
Not. I'm like, tell me more. So,
yeah,
because I'm not.
We're going back to you after this. I'm turning the questions back on you after this. So be prepared.
Who are you swiping for?
That's the question, right? It's like, that's why apps suck, is because they reduce you to your like worst form. Because what are you swiping on?
Usually the photos are terrible.
Yeah, that's true. But it's like, you know, it shows you what you value or like what your most kind of vain requirements are, because you only have like not even a second to make a judgment on this person.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, it's not the best way to know who's you know, a good match for you. But in terms of what am I swiping on, the first image, I think it's about the vibes. Like, you want to feel like in an instant feel like, oh, okay, this is someone I could respect, who I would feel safe around, who seems like I'd have fun with and be physically attracted to. Yeah, that's obviously a very big one. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, it's that first photo. And, yeah.
And what's your go-to opening line? Do you have a strategy?
Well, so on Bumble, which is where, yes, you know, like the in a heteronormative way, the woman have to, yeah, message first. I always try to be unique with every message and try to make it related to their profile or something. Often, like, the people I've swiped on, they'll have something funny in their profile. Oh, yeah. And that'll be, like, a good, you know, bantery conversation starter. I like it to be banter. I think messaging, texting, it's good for banter and good for making plans and logistics and that kind of thing, but it's not good for conversations like, oh, how was your holiday, or what countries have you been to, or how's your weekend, you know, like, no, like, we don't need, we can do that in person if we do meet. But online messaging, I think the best, like, the most flirty, sexy thing for dating app chat is banter. I think that's what, yeah, gets me excited.
Okay. Yeah. What's been your favorite date?
My favorite date.
Have you had one? Like, a really outstanding date?
I have thought about, like, what my perfect date would be.
And oh, so you haven't been on it?
Well, and I think I've been on it as well. Like, I think, because it's quite a simple thing. So you start in the daytime and you do, like, some kind of brunchy thing, you know, you, like, have an almond croissant, you know, have some eggs in some kind of form.
Where is this? Tell me where.
Oh, so this date, this particular date, we went to Odette's, I think. Okay, yeah. And, like, yeah, just chilling, chatting. It's a sunny day. There were, like, dogs in the kind of courtyard outside eating area. And then we went to chill at a park, and we might have, like, gotten something else to eat and just, like, lied around in the grass, chatting. And then we went to our respective homes, I think. Yeah, and we, like, I think I would have napped and, like, kind of, you know, rested a bit. And then I got up and got ready, like, washed my face again, did my makeup nice, like, got dressed up. And then we went out for dinner.
Ah.
And you, like, and I love doing that. I love, like, dressing up and, like, feeling a bit sexy and, like, going out somewhere nice for, like, dinner. And I thought, yeah, that's just, like, the perfect blend of, you know, you have your wholesome daytime, like, outdoors, bit of nature, bit of sun, some, you know, filling, delicious food. And then you can go home and have a bit of a rest and, like, reset and get your energy back and be alone for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then
Collect your thoughts.
Yeah. and then, yeah, get all, like, dolled up and then meet again for dinner and have, like, a kind of sexy evening time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like that nice balance. What's your perfect date?
I haven't been on many and definitely have not been on a perfect one, but what you've described is probably up there.
Yeah.
I would like probably a daytime thing where it's like the pressure is not on. I prefer it to be like super cash.
Yeah. That's it. Super cash.
Yeah.
No expectations, no stakes.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd be a good date though.
What?
I don't know.
You'd be a great conversationalist.
I don't,
which
honestly,
is the most
I don't
important
think I
part
would
of
be.
A date.
I actually don't think I would be. A good date for me would be, I really don't want to be doing all the talking.
Oh, right.
I did actually go on a date when I was in New York. The guy was really sweet. He took me to a bar called Death & Company.
Mm.
It was really fucking cool. But he didn't ask me many questions. Yes, there has to be a balance between, I don't want to be doing all the talking, but also some interest.
Yeah,
would be good.
That'd be nice. Yeah. No, that's a common trend. Yeah.
I didn't actually, I wasn't until after how you hear people go on these dates and they don't get asked anything. Mm. And I'm like, oh, wait, I've been on one of those.
Yeah, that's wild, eh? Like, how is that possible? But yeah, men sometimes, they're just wanting an audience, you know?
Yeah.
They're just wanting someone to be watching them and appreciating them.
Oof. If you had to be on Dating While Asian, have you thought about what your thing would be?
My thing would be, I think it's so hard to say that because I think you really have to be able to look at your own life through quite a bird's eye view. Because like these stories that we pull out for each episode, they're not necessarily like the person comes to you with like, this is the story of my dating life, you know. It's like you kind of draw it out through conversations with them and things change as their life progresses. Like, you know, Grace's story wasn't going to be a post-breakup story at the time that I was talking to her. Yeah. So I kind of feel like sometimes you need that outside perspective to really know what your own story is. But also maybe it's a bit of a thing with like maybe Kiwis. It's like we're not very good at telling our own stories
or
selling ourselves or knowing what, you know, our own thing is. Yeah, it's like, oh, me, I don't have a story. You know, what would my story be? Yeah, so it's hard to say. That's a bit of a non-answer for you.
Okay.
Well, I wrote about this a little bit for the Herald, so it's okay. It's like, you know, all the boomers who read the Herald know about this part of my life. So
oh, okay.
So we can talk about
it. I don't think there are many boomers who listen to this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's a different audience, but it's fine. Like, I've already shared it. In like around 2021-ish, I really, for the first time in my life, tried to have a hoe phase. Like I tried to experience, oh, what is it like to just, you know, date with like no real expectations, date people that you know, like, oh, I'm never going to end up, you know, with this person. But like, I'm just curious to see what it's like and what it'd be like to be like with this person. Yeah, so I dated with that intention for the first time. And it was the first time I like really opened up to the exotic world of white boys. Like, before that, I never really dated white people.
Oh, really?
Like, I would have in my lifetime, like, before then, I'd like, gone on dates with two white people, I think, up until that point. But everyone else would have been POC, mostly Asian, mostly East Asian. Yeah, which was, like, interesting. And it was, like, better than I thought it would be because I thought like I wouldn't connect with white boys as much or just you always feel like oh if it's like going to be a long-term relationship you know there's not that kind of deep sense of connection that we could potentially build together if they're white. That was kind of the assumption I made and it's still a belief that I hold kind of. I'm not like I can't see myself ever being with a white person but in general, I feel like it's less likely. But yeah, because I was just dating casually, I was like, oh yeah, I can, you know, I can date white people and it's all good. And it was really fun. It didn't end up really being a hoe phase because dating casually is still actually really hard and it's hard to find people who you'd like mesh with in that way as well. And, you know, the first criteria is always like you guys have to be mutually physically attracted to each other and have that kind of chemistry. And that's actually really hard to come across as well. Yeah, I was having a grand old time. But it's funny, like while I was making Dating While Asian, someone that I dated during that hoe phase, their friend messaged my friend and they were like talking about other stuff. And then like Dating While Asian, my series came up and they were like, oh, the series that Maggie's making about my friend so-and-so. And my friend was like, what? And then they were like, oh, I was just saying like how my friend has got a real thing for Asians and like Maggie's like dating or like Maggie's making a show about this person as a person who loves dating Asians. So he was joking about the guy that I dated having like an Asian fetish or something. Like at first I thought it was funny or like I just laughed and was like, oh, you know, like that's kind of weird but whatever. And then I like later in the day I was like in the bathroom like sitting on the toilet like thinking about it more and I was like, oh, like I don't know why I don't feel that good or I feel a bit embarrassed, you know, I feel a bit myself, like a bit ashamed and I don't know why. And I thought about it some more and I'm still not fully like, part of me still feels like, oh, it's, you know, no big deal, like it was a joke and it was like a self-aware joke. But then the other part of me is like, no, it's not that funny to joke about. And it's a bit hurtful because I genuinely liked this person, even, you know, as a casual dating situation. Like, I liked them for them.
Yeah.
This joke is kind of making fun of the fact that maybe they were dating me partly just because they're into Asians and I could be any other Asian. And even if that's not the case, even if this person doesn't have an Asian fetish, they, or at least their friend or their friend group thinks it's funny to joke about it or to make light of it or to be like, and it just enforces this like dynamic where it's like, you're this woman being perceived by these men and kind of being rated by them, you know, or being like judged based on like your Asianness.
Oh,
or your,
God, yeah.
And, like, I think that's why, like, it was all wrapped up in those feelings, and that's why I felt embarrassed and felt a little bit gross and a bit icky. And it, like, kept me up that night as well, like, trying to, like, think about why I was so bothered, even though part of me felt like it wasn't a big deal. But, yeah, since then, I've kind of made a bit more peace with it, blasted them on an article.
Did you?
Well, and that was the Herald article that I'd mentioned. I kind of talked about it a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's all anonymous. Yeah. And
you channeled it into.
Yeah.
You created something.
Yeah, it's like Taylor Swift vibes, you know, like how she's like writes about all her exes, but she uses their actual names and I used pseudonyms. Yeah. And I still think they're lovely people. Like, I don't actually think like these, like, you know, two white boys involved are like bad people or like really don't get it. If anything, you know, I think they get quite a bit. Like, I think they'd be quite woke and a bit educated on these things. But it's just those, like, little nuanced ways where, yeah, you can just kind of be reminded of your place a little bit.
Yeah, it can definitely throw you off.
Yeah, and because you think you're, like, you know, having this grand old time, like, yeah, you know, being a little bit of a hoe and, you know.
Yeah, like it's like this light, fun thing.
Yeah. And then you're suddenly reminded like, oh no, wait, this is how you're perceived. Yeah. And that's always like this niggly thing in the back of your mind. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that would be a good one. Well, yeah, that's your episode. I understand. Yeah. I must read that. I haven't read that Herald article, I don't think. You sent me the one on pleasure.
Oh yes, that was on Re. Yeah, that was a fun article. Yeah, the Herald one is like paywalled or something. Like,
is it?
I didn't link. I was like, oh, I don't want any of my friends to pay like $2 to read this. Like, but I think it comes out of the paywall this weekend.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Is it recent?
It was just last weekend.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, and that pleasure article.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
So at ReNews, we have theme weeks occasionally where we will all, everyone on the team will do a story related to a particular theme. And we had a pleasure week like a year or two ago. So we all did stories around sex and pleasure and bodies and things. And I'd always, wanted to write about just the fact that heterosexual women have less pleasure in sex than heterosexual men and just how sad and how tragic that is and how there's like all this potential that's just not unlocked for so many women everywhere. And because it's like maybe it's as an issue, it's not as valued or as talked about or not as openly talked about, so people can't learn from each other. It's an issue that, like at least among me and my friends and like people in my life, I feel like, it wasn't an issue that was talked about so much. So I just wanted to, do an article
that laid
it out in the open and just laid out the facts and try to see if, you know, there's a better way. And there is.
There is.
Yeah. There's got to be a better way.
I love how you linked to an academic article being like the different...
I forgot about
the penetration... Well, they called them different things.
Oh, I can't remember. It was different ways to, like, penetrate, like, how women could enjoy penetrative sex more.
Someone said that to all the straight men.
Yeah.
Who don't know how to do that.
Yes. And the key is, like, it's time. Like, I think that was my biggest takeaway from writing and talking to all the amazing people who spoke with me for that article and for Nomuna's episode of Dating While Asian is, I think, a key thing is timing, and in a sexual partnership, each other giving each other the grace of time to like really figure each other out, have them warm up, figure out what they like. Maybe you're not going to get it in one evening, you know, maybe you're not going to get it in a month, but it's like having the patience and time to like, you know, figure those things out.
Yeah.
Because it can take a lot of time, you know?
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
But I think we just think like, oh, you know, you hook up and like, you know, like a rubber clit in this way or whatever and, you know, and it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But like probably vast majority of the time it's not, you know?
Yeah. Do you want to pull a pleasure oracle card?
Yes.
Okay.
I feel like, because I listened to this happen and I feel very excited that I'm doing this now.
Okay. So, do you have a question? You don't have to ask a question, but there might be something specific. A question might be, in terms of pleasure and feeling good in your body, what are you being called to pay attention to? Or like, or could be like just in general.
That's a good question, though. I think, yeah, in terms of my body and looking after my body.
Well, what will help bring you some pleasure?
Okay,
have a shuffle. And just whenever you feel like they're shuffled enough or there's a specific card that's calling, you just pick that one. Okay.
I love the artwork on these as well. Very pretty. Okay. I just read.
Uh-huh. What does it say? It
says, "You're alive. To experience hurt and loss is to become more wise. Nothing good ever came from playing it safe. Whereas risk may contain injury, it also contains every imaginable treasure. So dare yourself to do something major. It's by moving through pain rather than bypassing it that we come face to face with pleasure. That goes for life as much as it does kink." And the action is, because life's heartbreaks will come whether you welcome them or not, you may as well invite them in and accept their gifts. It would be rude not to. To feel pain is to know you're alive. And what a gift that is. Yeah, that resonates.
Does it?
That really does, yeah. I've been thinking about that a bit recently, actually. It's like how, like my last and only really big breakup, like I was so heartbroken. And I cried every day for a month. I was just telling my friend the other day who was also going through a breakup, that I like wrote in my notes app all the things that I wanted to tell them during the day, uh-huh. You know, because you can't.
Oh, the notes app has seen some.
Oh, the notes app.
Yeah.
This is the meme, right, where you're like searching for like your IRD code or whatever and you're scrolling through your notes and you're like, oh, shit.
It's like 3 a.m. Yeah. It's like letter. Yeah. Oh, I'd been there.
Man, that was rough, Maggie. But yeah, like I wrote my notes app, like, you know, all the little things that you would normally tell them during the day, but you can't message them to them anymore. So you're like, it was like this big like thing of like memes and just, you know, little observations that I had no one to tell. And yeah, and I was so heartbroken. And it took me like a good year at least to really feel a lot more settled about it and feel like at peace and not kind of all tangled up and, you know, tight and, tense about it. And now it feels like it's in a very good place. And I guess with that perspective and, you know, that peace that's come now, I can look back on it and I'm like, how amazing is it that I felt so much heartbreak and so much sadness over this, because it must have meant, you know, what we had was so amazing. And like, I must have felt so much affection and so much deep feeling for this person to have felt that much pain. And like, that's, you know, a really special experience to have, and it's a really special life experience to have, like, under my belt, I guess.
It can feel like grieving a death, I think,
yeah,
a relationship.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I've read somewhere it's like you lose like a shared language, you know, and you lose like a version of yourself that you were when you were with them that's like never going to exist again. And I mean, do you know the Beths?
Yes.
And their song, what's the like recent album? And their song was Expert in a Dying Field. That was the lead single of their most recent album. And the lyrics are all about like, yeah, after breakup, it's like you're an expert in this dying field. Like you're an expert in this like topic and this subject and this person.
Yeah.
That's dying, that's, you know, leaving, that's gone. But you have all this information, all these memories, all this like language.
Yes, all the places.
All these places. Yeah. All these And you know so, and it's all in your brain and now it's like got nowhere to go, you know? Yeah. And that song hit me real hard when I heard the lyrics. Yeah.
I'll have to listen to it. Oh yeah.
It's really good.
So that card then, what do you think that's suggesting?
I think it's asking me to take some risks and to put myself out there a bit.
How close are you to like doing that?
Well, I don't know what in practice that would look like. Yeah.
Describe your ideal partner or relationship.
My ideal relationship is one where I feel very myself and very seen and very appreciated for who I am, like in a very genuine way. Like, they see all the kind of slightly bitchy and stupid and, you know, parts of me, but they either accept it or even find it endearing or they like it. And I feel, yeah, very safe and very settled with them. Grace, you know, a very wise friend, Grace, she has like a really great quote in her episode where she says, I think at the end, like she wants to find someone that doesn't activate her nervous system all the time. And she doesn't feel like she's pulling away. She doesn't feel like she's, you know, clinging on. It just feels like safe and secure. So I think that's the feeling that, you know, I, and I'm sure a lot of people are always chasing.
I remember that. That really resonated with me. I think the bit, because my ex was white, I remember feeling, you know, talking about activating the nervous system, kind of on edge a little bit because needing... conscious that he wasn't aware of cultural codes, you know, needing to, and it's not that he would have asked that. It was more like, that's more me wanting to ensure this is like smooth for everyone.
Right.
So I'm like assessing everyone, like my family, how's he, how's every, like what's the, yeah. It would be nice to just not have that.
That might just be you being a very compassionate, empathetic person as well, and just being very aware of the energies in the room and that kind of thing.
But that's a really good point, feeling at ease.
And you know, someone who makes me laugh, the classic line in Roger Rabbit, you know, like where she's Jessica Rabbit, it's like everyone's like, oh, why are you like dating Roger, you know, he's a rabbit and you're like super hot, and just like, he makes me laugh.
Oh my god, that was written by a man, wasn't it? Okay, so I've created something called Asian Aotearoa. You've created something called Dating While Asian. Where is the value and what are the pitfalls of creating something with that Asian label?
The rip sweats.
The what?
The rip sweats. The this is a term I learned recently. The representation sweats.
Oh, okay. I'm like, do you mean, okay. Keep going.
The burden of representation.
Yeah,
because you're never going to capture the totality of Asian experiences.
No.
And it's not possible to. I think with Dating While Asian, when I first like shared it with some people before it was released, and like these were like maybe just very final drafts, I think some people were expecting like some kind of conclusion or takeaway or learning around dating while Asian, or like, you know, is there something like you're trying to say or some kind of message, you know, that we're putting out about being an Asian person and dating? Whereas what this series really is just five stories from five individuals and their particular lives. So it's like, oh, you know, they're nice stories, but like, you know, what's like the, yeah, like, what are you saying about dating while Asian? And yeah, that made me a bit worried about like the title of the series, I guess. I was kind of like, oh, like, are people going to be expecting, you know, like some kind of big message or expecting...
I think it was better that you weren't trying to make one.
Yeah, because I don't think it's possible at all. Like, and I would never try to. I would never, and you know.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so then I was, like, worried about, like, oh, you know, well, how are we framing this? Like, is like, you know, having this, like, word Asian, and it kind of feels like you put so much responsibility into it somehow, you know, that you need to, like, yeah, I guess represent this community or be communicating some kind of like really meaningful message. Yeah. But yeah, all you can really do is tell your own story.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, what each of the five people have done in the series. And also what was like also is connected to that is the feeling that because it's called Dating While Asian, everything has to be wrapped up in something about being Asian, that every story has to, you know, be saying something about Asianness as well, which is... You know, those are like, I think it's what a lot of Asian people in the community have complained about, right? Is like, why do our stories always have to be about our culture or some kind of like trauma tied to our past? Or, you know, like, why can't we just tell stories and have it not be wrapped up in our Asianness? Yeah, that was also like top of mind when I made this. Mm. And there's one episode that's like not about being Asian at all, really. Like, it's about being Asian because the person telling the story is Asian.
Yes.
But, yeah, they didn't need to, like, explicitly, you know, delve into their Asianness in the episode. Yeah, and there are aspects of everybody's stories that, you know, can apply to anybody.
Yeah. When I was recording with my friend Elena the AMA episode, and we were kind of talking, and then Elena kind of pulled out this insight. She asked this question about whether it was like that what was kind of talked on the podcast is a reflection of me. And I'm like, of course it is.
Mm.
If someone else, if I gave the podcast to someone else, it would be totally different, but with the same name.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like what we'd actually talk about is quite different.
Yeah.
So it's very distilled through me.
Mm.
Like I ask about spirituality because I'm just kind of interested. So yeah, it's just that whole representation thing. It's like there's Asian in the name, but there's no attempt to be speaking for everyone, which is kind of impossible anyway.
Yeah, yeah. How could you possibly? Yeah. But that is so interesting. Like everything we do, is always going to be filtered through our own lens.
Yeah.
It's never going to be like this kind of neutral thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's quite cool. Yeah, I never thought about it in that way, but yeah.
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 You mentioned, so on this project, it sounded like it was a lot of work.
Yes.
And you put forward a really great question, is burnout an ingrained part of the creative industries?
And I don't know the answer to that, man.
Like, yeah, it's like by choosing working in a creative field, are you also choosing being eventually burned out? Can you have one without the other?
The tricky part is your work does become so closely tied to your identity and who you are. I don't want to speak for other careers and just assume, like, I don't know, an accountant doesn't, you know, feel their work pretty deeply or tied to their identity. But, like, I feel like you can definitely say it for creative people that if you've got like a project, you've got a baby, you know, your music or your visual art or whatever, it's a huge part of who you are.
Yeah, when it's an expression of yourself. I mean, I was burnt out, but I was in marketing. It wasn't, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I can imagine if it's an expression of yourself.
Yeah, like it's something that, is a part of who you are. Like it's not something that you take off when you go home, you know, when you clock out for work. Like it's still in your brain. It's still, you know, in your body. Like you're still thinking about it or at least on a subconscious level, you know? So I think, not being able to have that delineation between work and outside of work when you're a creative, I think that can be very stressful and put quite a strain on you. And then, if it's the space where you make money, that's always going to make it a lot more stressful. And at least in like film production-y type stuff, from the taste that I've gotten through the like experience I've had so far, it seems like crazy work hours, moments of really intense work are just the norm, no matter what part of production you are. If you're like an editor, if you're a DOP, a producer, director, like if you're working on a project that you care about, and a lot of the time people are working on projects that they really care about and are invested in, you're gonna have like an intense period where you're just working nonstop. And why is that how like it's structured systemically, why is that required?
How do you care for yourself?
When Dating While Asian was like in its peak busy period, like during filming and the couple of weeks that were before and after filming, I like worked every single day for like a month and a half, at least. Like that was like every single day was working. So there was very little space in my life for anything. But I find if I just keep a few key things going, so I did my skincare routine every day. I kept up going to the gym somehow. I was still going to, Les Mills. Shout out Les Mills, my favorite gym. I was still going to the gym like maybe two or three times a week. Yeah, I think that's about it. But if you keep up like some things that just make you feel good, make you feel like your body's like a bit nourished or like you've got, your shit together in some way, that helps. That's no way to live.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't wish that upon anybody.
Yeah, I wonder if that's the Capricorn moon. It's sort of like, if I need to smash some work out and work, I can. But who wants to live like that?
Yeah, I don't want to do it again.
How spiritual would you say you are?
I think I would like to be more spiritual in terms of religion. Like I was never raised with any kind of religion, and like, the Cultural Revolution in China wiped out like a lot of religion. And my parents never raised me with anything. But I have been thinking lately about how I can be more connected to my past and like where I'm from and my ancestors and like delving deeper into that history and trying to like form yeah, deeper connections with my ancestors somehow. Yeah, I'm going back to China in April with my mum. It'll be the first time since, you know, pre-COVID.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've just been thinking about like how I want to just learn more about my past and like my family in particular, and kind of hoping like through those avenues I can find those connections that I'm talking about and also find a bit of spirituality in that as well, I think.
Yeah. Exploring your connection with your ancestors or just the connection full stop really critical. Well, I mean, for me anyway, for me personally. I started a new job recently and I was reading something about Wairua.
Yes.
And just that the concept of spirituality, that connection to the land and family and community and ancestors. It was just really beautiful. I'm really curious about it.
Yeah, I'm quite inspired by that as well.
Yeah.
I think it gives you a lot to like, a lot of grounding, a lot of foundation to rely on. I mean, that's what religion does for a lot of people, right? It's like it gives them this like kind of this like structural.
It can. Yeah.
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 And I know.
Religion is an interesting one as a system because, it's obviously it's a structure that on the surface you would hope that it would give people that.
Yeah, I guess.
But also, there's
the
so much religious trauma. Oh my God.
Yeah. But were you raised religious?
I was raised Catholic. My dad's side of the family is very Catholic. My dad is Catholic. He's a practicing Catholic.
Oh, yeah.
But he's also very, he's not a closed-minded Catholic.
Okay. Nice.
So that's been actually really good. I would say probably my father's probably one of the major spiritual influences in my life.
That's cool.
And that's not due to Catholicism.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that we haven't covered that you want to talk about before I go into finish these sentences?
Well, we didn't talk about your dating life. I told you I was going to...
This will be a very short segment.
I told you I was going to grill you. what's your dating app profile?
I was recently in Europe and my friends were like, you gotta go on the app. I didn't. So I was in London, Paris, Amsterdam, Venice, Rome, and then I went up to Scotland.
Oh my gosh.
But I just didn't feel like it. Okay. Even though my friend was what did she use? Maybe it was Hinge. She hooked up with this Italian guy. Hilarious. So I would say I'm probably like... maybe 70% interested in going back on an app.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's promising. Yeah, I mean,
if it's an app is nil, but I'm just sort of like, I don't know.
I think, like, the older we get, the more we value our time.
Oh, yeah,
And you think about, like, the opportunity cost. If you're like, if I spend time going on this date with this person, what's the opportunity cost? It's
absolutely
me hanging out at home, like, you know, feeling relaxed, like watching a show, drinking tea or whatever, which is like really pleasurable thing to do. Is this date going to be better than that? You know, or is this date going to be better than me going to bed, you know, before 10:30 or something? You value those things so much more. So then I guess it's a roundabout way of saying your standards go up, I guess, as you get older, because you know what you want. Yeah.
And... I am getting older. So the standards are up there. So I don't know. When are we getting there?
Yeah.
And I'm like, what even put in a profile? The whole thing. I'm like, can someone else do it for me? Yeah. And do the whole thing.
I mean, I think that is like a job. Like there are people who are like dating app consultants or something and they help you with your bio. Yeah. I think it's more targeted towards like straight men who just feel like they're not getting any matches or whatever.
Or they're like old, you know, the old school like matchmaking services, that's really old school, where it's like you'd record a thing.
We wanted to do that for the Dating While Asian launch party. It was like a blind date matchmaking thing, where like people would, submit like in a Google form or something, like ask a bunch of questions about themselves, and then we would match them with someone that we thought would be cool. And then the Dating While Asian screening party would be their first date, and they get to meet at the event. You know, a little bit of promo for Rhi.
Yeah.
And Yeah, that would have been so fun. I think legal poo-pooed it. We couldn't get it past, like, you know, the health and safety and stuff, because we'd have to do background checks and you have a bit of a responsibility to the people involved in it, that they're safe and all that kind of thing. We just couldn't take on that responsibility. And also, it's a big thing to organise.
Yeah, I can imagine the logistics of that. Yeah. But I would be very open to someone matching me with someone else.
Yeah.
So
I think maybe there's a business there, yeah. Hopefully someone's listening to this and
I don't know, it's been 2 years in. But, you know, okay, no, I'm positive. I'm a positive person. Mm, okay. Yes. Yeah, so that's my non-existent dating life at the moment. But who knows? The year is young. Finish these sentences. I'm feeling inspired by
all the people in Dating While Asian. Grace, Victor, Chenille, Eleanor and Nomuna. I learned so much from each of them. I was saying this at the party, like, it's so fucking brave to share your story, and it's so generous as well. Mm. And the benefit that we all get is we get to see someone that we can really relate to and realize that the feelings we have are shared. And yeah, it's just really cool to see. And most of them are younger than me, and like, and they're so, you know, intelligent and self-aware and thoughtful and just makes me really happy and excited to have gotten to know them and to know that young people are so cool.
Exactly. I think that too. Mm. Young people are so cool. Oh yeah. My God. I'm really looking forward to
Lord playing at Outerfields, like the at Western Springs. Because Laneway was cancelled.
Yeah.
Which was really heartbreaking. But Lord, she's kind of got this like mini lineup going on. Marlon Williams is opening, Phaser Days, Ricky Reed, I think. So it's like, it's going to be a good show, and we'll be outside, kind of thinking of it as like, yeah, Laneway 2.0, like a little mini Laneway. So I'm looking forward to just like, that's where I feel spiritual, is like enjoying live music and just, you know, just vibing for the benefit of the podcast format. I'm waving my arms around and looking towards the sky.
Yes.
It's like, it's the best feeling ever. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that.
Cool. I'd love to be known for.
What I want to be known for? I want to be known, like, among the people who've, you know, met me in person as being just a nice, chill person. Yeah.
Well, great. Thank you.
Thank you. This was so fun.
Maggie,
oh
that
my
was
gosh.
Fun. Thank you so much. Congrats on the series again. It is so cool.
Thank you so much for having me on this show. I've been, like, lurking for, you know, like probably 2 years.
Really?
Yeah, just, you know, listening occasionally. And yeah, so it's very exciting to be on the show now.
Yay!
Thanks for listening to this episode with Maggie. If you liked that, share it with a friend, leave a review, and follow Asian and Aotearoa on Instagram for updates.